This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning on this cold, 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 minus like 30 feeling with a wind chill morning, Charlie?
Well said. Yes, I was just dancing to our intro music just to warm myself up a bit. It is really crispy here. Not a cloud in the sky, just crystal blue, windy. And it's almost kind of like a moonscape because I think the wind has moved the snow around now. So it's not very inviting to go out. Well, I guess it's inviting to go outside for about 2 seconds and then you run back in.
yes. Oh, it is cold.
Yeah, I know. Record breaking, it seems like, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's just winter and we're just not ready for it still.
maybe because we had the Groundhog Day last Monday. And so we're just I say when Groundhog Day rolls around, I start to get myself in the headspace because I feel like it's like being past Wednesday in a work week. I feel like we're over the hump now. I feel like, you know, but February has got to be one of the coldest months.
Oh, yeah. And it feels like the longest, even though it's not. We're looking forward to spring, that's for sure.
We are. Now, before, I know you have a number of announcements to make, but before we do that, we need to say that we still don't have the ability to take calls right now, but we're taking texts and emails, okay? So please use the same phone number, the 1-866-740-4740 number to text us. And many of you did that last week, and good on you. Okay. So for that, and that's great.
And the week before too.
And the week before as well. Yeah. So 1-866-740-4740 is the number to text us, or you can send an email. Okay. And so either way works for us, and we will address your questions on the air. And with that, I guess I'm going to hand it over to you because you have some announcements to make.
Well, I do. Well, it is that time of year, as we said. You know, winter is feeling like it's kind of on the way out, maybe, but a lot of spring activities are happening. I just want to remind people, we really do love to hear from you. You know, Dean and I get a bit tired of our own voices, so we can't hear your voices, but we can certainly hear your questions. But maybe you have some tips or tricks or suggestions. I always remember, I think it's Joan who will often, right at this time of year, remind us that just to get away from the drab days of winter, if you can get outside and you can prune some of your early spring shrubbery, like forsythia as an example, or say an apple tree or even a purple sand cherry, something like that, bringing in some of those dormant twigs, you know, of course you want longer than a twig. You want, you know, 1 or 2 foot lengths of branches. Get them in the house, get them in water, and you'll have some blooms indoors. And this, for me, is really important. I love having flowers inside, but particularly now, it's just feeling good to have anything, whether it's a little blooming bulb or a blooming orchid or a blooming, you know, amaryllis, anything is great to have indoors. So work on that. But if you can't do indoor blooms, you can at least get together with fellow gardeners. So lots and lots going on. I mentioned last week that the Agent Court Garden Club is meeting this Monday, February the 9th. It is a Zoom meeting at 7 p.m. Everybody is welcome to attend the Zoom meeting. It's the speaker is Karen Young, and she's one of the Gray County Master Gardeners speaking on culinary herbs. Now, I mentioned last week that if you wanted to join that Zoom meeting, you can email me, and I can send you the Zoom codes. And one of our listeners did. So, you know, good on you. If you're interested in culinary herbs, 7 p.m. this Monday, send me a quick email and I'll shoot you the codes. This Wednesday, February 11th, Burlington Hort Society is having an in-person meeting, 6:30 p.m., auditorium at the Central Arena. That's 519 Drury Lane in Burlington. Robert Pavlis, who is an amazing Guelph Master Gardener, will be speaking on starting from seeds. So that's 6:30 in Burlington. For more information, www.burlingtonhs.com. Same night, Wednesday, February 11th, the Riverdale Hort Society's meeting. Now, that's in Toronto area, sort of East Yorkish area. They meet, it's a hybrid meeting, so in-person and Zoom. People are very creative, I find, with their mm-hmm. winter meetings. So the meeting will be starting at 7 p.m. Because it's a hybrid, you can Zoom in. Yeah, just request the link for the Zoom by sending an email to info@ Riverdale Horticultural. So riverdalehorticultural.ca. Request the Zoom link and join in for the 7 p.m. meeting, or join in person at the Frankland Community Center, 816 Logan Avenue in Toronto. The speaker is Shane Abernethy. He is a bird bander at the Tommy Thompson Park Bird Research Station. Huh. So he's going to be talking about migrating birds and banding birds and identifying birds and all kinds of cool stuff, which is very, very interesting. I find I imagine I'll have some video. He'll have great pictures, I'm sure. And just quickly, coming up, I've said this before, the Orchid Show at the Toronto Botanical Gardens, that'll be next weekend, all weekend, well, 14th and 15th. I've mentioned it a million times, so if you want more information, go to the Toronto Botanical Gardens. As well, the Royal Botanical Gardens in Burlington is hosting something called Bloomland in Oz. That's on right. Yeah, crazy, eh? That's Bloomland. So this is all a bunch of blooms. It's kind of a show. So it's a show of not just flowers, but the arts, sculptures and all that. Of course, it's an indoor show. And maybe it's a bit of a replacement for the fact that people are missing Canada blooms. And this, they tried to put this together as a real interesting experience. You know, the beauty of what you see, but what you smell, what you feel as you walk through the Royal Botanical Gardens. It is on right from, the month of February and March, right through till April 6th. But the tickets are timed ticketed. So you can't just wander in when you want. You got to buy your tickets in advance and plan your day to get into the show. And I guess certain times of day are quieter than others, you know, better for taking photos, et cetera.
So they're trying to balance that out a little bit with this ticket structure.
That's right. And even the primetime tickets are more expensive than the off-time tickets. So that can be a real bonus when you can go off time, you can save some money. And then the one other thing is, again, back to the Toronto Botanical Gardens, the annual Get the Jump on Spring. That's a one-day event on Saturday, the 21st of February. So in 2 weeks, 10 till 4, so pretty much all day. It's always a gathering of growers, of horticultural societies doing speaking and sharing their experiences and knowledge. Plus there's a bunch, again, creative types. So you've got lots of it's just interesting stuff. I remember some of the art when I went to this one time, Get the Jump on Spring. Of course, the art tended to be botanical, but you know, totally beautiful and totally cool. So if you can book that in, that again, that's a great break from minus whatever, 20, 30 at home.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when I was on the air yesterday, we were reporting minus 16, minus 17 in most areas, but with that wind chill feeling like minus 30, minus 32 is what it's sitting at. Well, I was on my way home last night I was at the opera last night.
And,
and the blowing was unbelievable. And it was reading on my truck, it was reading minus 17 on the way home. So, but the wind, whiteout conditions on the way, between Barrie and Collingwood, it was quite nasty.
I bet. White knuckle driving, I guess.
It was. Yeah. Where you lose the vehicle in front of you for, you know, a few seconds because the white just takes over. So it was, the only unpleasant part of the journey, really. Once, up the 400 wasn't too bad. Mm-hmm. But once, got it. It's the fields, right? All the fields.
Yeah. I know, yeah. Blowing across when it's so windy. I wonder if anybody's skiing today up your way or if it's just too cold.
Well, it can be too cold. The other thing that can happen if the winds are too bad, they will shut down the lifts. So there's a few reasons, and I'm not saying that they have done that, but high winds will sometimes shut down the lifts because if the chairs start rocking, that's a problem. And the other thing, which is not an issue today, but if you get a freezing rain situation, it can clog up the cables as well because it coats all the cables, and that can mess up things. So as far as I know, the ski hills are open today, but then it really is just a matter of the extreme cold, and so it's not for everybody.
No, balaclava day.
Yes.
No exposed skin.
No. Okay, we're going to go to a break in a moment, but here's the number again. And I have the text line. We have the feed right in front of us. So our technical operator, Owen Wolf, he lets us know as soon as he gets them, he puts them into the viewing sheet here. And so I'll get it in real time and would love to hear from you. 1-866-740-4740. You can also email c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. Okay, so c.dobbin. Either way, would love to hear from you. Please shout out with your questions, comments, clarifications. Can be an indoor gardening question. Can be a problem. Can be a whatever you've got in your brain.
Another announcement. You know,
could be another announcement
going on in your local hood that you want to share with the gang.
Indeed, we'd love to hear about it. We'll be right back with much more on the Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yeah, back here on The Garden Show on the 7th of February. And it is a chilly one, as we've been talking about. How hard is this on the trees and the plants? I mean, I actually have to tell you that all over the snow today, because the wind is so fierce, I did see little bits of tree branches all over. Now, mind you, we have birches, so birches drop their stuff very easily. So I think a good portion of it is that.
Yeah.
But this must take its toll on some plants.
The wind will, for sure, because the wind will desiccate. We use the word desiccate when we talk about plants. We use the word dehydrate when we talk about animals. But either way, the evergreens, which are always green, have that surface area, large surface area of those green leaves, and they lose liquid through those leaves. The ground is frozen. The roots are in frozen ground. There's no moisture going into the plants, but moisture is being lost from the plants where they're exposed to the wind. So they're the ones that look fine right now. They'll look green all winter. They are as dormant as they ever get. But what we'll see if they have suffered from, you know, desiccation this winter, by about April or March, suddenly those green plants are less green. And then over a period of a couple of weeks, they'll turn, you know, rusty orange or yellow or golden. And we'll know that that's what they suffered from was just high winds. And that is something that only way we can protect, of course, is making sure the plants are very well watered in the autumn before the ground freezes. So the roots are in an ice cube. They still can't get the water, but at least there's water nearby once it starts to thaw. But also in a really windy spot, like you were mentioning, the wind, you know, at the road going, you know, causing all the drifting on the roads and squalls, etc. We can use things like burlap, even felt. There's a sort of big rolls of felt you can buy, and do some wrapping just to protect from wind. So we're not keeping the plants warm. It's not like we're cuddling them up in blankets. It's more just having that reflecting the wind off the plants or around the plants instead of actually, you know, causing them to lose moisture. Deciduous plants are rarely suffer other than if they're not hardy enough in this cold weather. But, you know, most of us grow pretty tough stuff. And interesting, you mentioned the birch dropping twigs. Many trees have evolved to survive big wind by dropping peripherals. So think of weeping willows. Have you ever seen a weeping willow after a big windstorm?
Maybe not. I love weeping willows, but I don't know that I've looked right after a windstorm.
Yeah, like it or an ice storm, because they'll just break. Every branch will get broken off and you'll just have that main stem left, and that tree will be perfectly alive come spring. It will pop out with all kinds of green growth, but you know, they can lose an awful lot and still survive. But that is a survival mechanism.
Right. Now, and birches typically drop a lot anyway. Like, yeah. I mean, they drop all year round.
Yeah.
And so
brittle. It comes down to brittleness.
Yeah.
Yeah. The tips are brittle.
Well, and I love it because we have a fire pit on our property. And so, and because birch is very highly flammable, it has something in there that is, it's almost like lighter fluid, I guess, whatever it is, but they're great for kindling. So I just collect them up all the time. And I usually use them if we're going to have a fire out the back of the house or side of the house, I use that.
Have you had a fire this winter?
I have not, but I've been planning on doing it, actually. Yeah, it is on the list to do.
Yeah.
And it hasn't jived yet. On the days that I have the time, if it's like this or if it's too windy, of course, then I
forget
don't.
Forget it, yeah.
You need that perfect evening where it's gentle and cold and you can sit and enjoy it. But it is on the list.
Me too.
With hot chocolate and s'mores.
Yeah, exactly. Me too.
Something like that.
Partially because I have old paperwork to deal with. And of course, and it was so funny when I moved to the county where I live now, Prince Edward County, I brought my shredder because back in York region, we use things like shredders.
Yes.
When I looked it up in the recycling book, what do you do with shredded paper? Of course, like nobody shreds paper in the county. They burn it.
They just burn it.
And I was like, oh, like what a bozo. Of course. Like, why would I waste my time shredding when I can just burn? So I've got this pile of paperwork. And won't do that on a windy day, obviously. And we did get our burn permit because I live where you must get a permit.
We have to get one as well.
Before you burn.
As well.
Yeah.
The number again, and I do have a couple of bird-related questions that have come down from Paul Oliver. And so I'm going to read at least one or two of those when I give out the number. It's 1-866-740-4740. Text us. Okay. We would love to hear from you. Talking about peanuts here. So Paul says that Nancy wrote in asking which peanuts are better for squirrels in her backyard, raw or roasted? This is actually a question that has crossed my mind as well.
Is that right?
Well, because sometimes, you know, you can go into the specific birding section and buy the peanuts, but there's been the odd time where I've seen maybe a really good deal on the peanuts that we would eat at home. And I thought, I wonder if I can put those out as well, or maybe they're not suitable. And so she's heard different advice from friends. So the biggest concern, Paul says, actually isn't raw versus roasted, about whether the squirrels are relying too heavily on peanuts. So peanuts aren't a natural food for squirrels.
And not issues, here.
Not here, no. And and issues can arise if they become a main food source, okay? So that said, most backyard squirrels supplement their natural foraging with peanuts, especially when they're offered unsalted and in the shell. So peanuts usually make only up a small part of their overall diet. And he's put that in bold print. So that's very important. So if you are going to offer them raw, unsalted peanuts in the shell are the best option. Roasted peanuts are less ideal, and salted peanuts should always be avoided. Okay.
Yeah, that's because for us.
Yeah. Because then what you're going to do is you're going to be seeing them outside with a beer or something like that too. Salted peanuts, and you do not want intoxicated squirrels on your yard.
Or they'll be practicing their Blue Jay cheers.
That's right. The next thing you know, you might as well just throw out a deck of cards then as well and just, you know, give them the whole deal.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Okay,
No. Moderation. Peanuts in moderation. Just
in moderation.
A special treat for the squirrels, not
indeed
regular.
Okay. 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more in The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Here on The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. And the number again, 1-866-740-4740. A text came through, Charlie, asking if we could please have the code for the Zoom meeting on Monday. It's about the culinary herb garden. And I don't know if that's the one that you can give the code on the air, whether you need them to.
I can, but it's going to, let me see.
Is it a long code?
Yeah, I was going to say they usually are.
Oh, so it's not like a 3-digit code or anything?
No.
It's probably got all these letters and everything in it that you have to cut and paste in.
Yeah, I'm just looking. So I wonder if the text, you're right, I've got an email from Joanne Bonney. She does want that code, so I'll email Joanne with that. So maybe is the text from Joanne?
I think maybe at least like you to review how to request the code. And that's basically going on, is it emailing you at c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. So that's what you need to do. You need to just send an email to Charlie at c.dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. And then she will reply to you with that code in the body of the email.
Right. That's. I think that's the easiest way to do it. It's the Asian Court Garden Club. And I think Cheryl, who's the person who sends me all their announcements, I think she probably got a bit inundated last time and said, you know, she just gave it all to me. So I was like, okay, fine. I'll forward it. Yeah. I've also just received Barbara Twiner has just sent an email with an announcement for the Pickering Garden Club. Okay. They are meeting this Tuesday, February the 10th at 7 p.m. Again, it's a Zoom meeting. To attend, you would send an email. Just like the Riverdale Hort, you will send an email to the Pickering Garden Club. The email address is info@pickeringgardenclub. I imagine it's .ca. If you want to attend this meeting, the subject is optimizing horticulture for health. And the speaker is Guinevere Kern, and so optimizing horticulture for health. I assume that's for our health, for the planet's health, for the ecosystem, plants, flora, fauna health. It's probably a big topic, kind of like the TV show we did.
Yeah, fair enough. You know what? One thing that's come to mind, Charlie. We have a question here. Diane from Dorchester. Only half of Christmas cactus. So she's saying that only half of her Christmas cactus bloomed early December and the other half middle of January. Now the whole cactus is blooming. So that is very peculiar. I would be curious about that too. Why would one half bloom one time and one half next month?
I imagine it was environmental, that the plant that started with half the plant blooming was in the optimal conditions on that half of the plant. So it probably was facing the window. So remember how we turn our plants 180 degrees every week or so, just to try and maintain balanced growth, and in this case, balanced blooming. So I would imagine that that's what happened. Or it could be a temperature thing, because it's going to be cooler near the glass if this plant is right in the window. You're always going to have that layer, that blanket of cold air along the glass when we're having a cold winter. And Christmas cactus really does respond to both light and temperature. Okay. So I can only imagine it was something like that, where it was the perfect environment, you know, conditions. And then a month later, obviously, it sounds like Diane probably spun the plant and then set up the next perfect conditions so that now she's in full bloom, which is cool.
Well, it sounds quite magical to me, quite frankly, the whole idea of half of it blooming and the other half the next month. So that's kind of nifty. Mm-hmm. I was going to say that, of course, next Saturday, is Valentine's Day. And of course, Valentine's Day is a very, very, very popular time to send roses. I mean, that is a very typical time. I've never been one, especially red roses. Red roses are, I'm going to go on record, red long stem roses are my least favorite rose. Not my thing. You know, I over the years, I've given Gail some roses on, I think I typically lean towards a more of an off-white. I find them much more delicate and pretty. But I don't know what's your thing on roses this time of year. How should we go Valentine's Day wise?
Well, if you really look into it, it's amazing. Different flowers mean different things.
They do,
and
yes.
Different colors mean different things.
Right. So I think, isn't red like passion or something, like fiery passion?
I love you so much.
Yeah.
I just want to, you know, eat you up. Versus white. White is purity.
Purity. Yeah.
And I think you're an angel and you know, you're the light of my life. I mean, they often still send love, but they just send it differently, right? And, you know, pink was always kind of the sweetheart roses, like, you know, that you're pretty and you're cute and, you know.
Is it yellow friendship or something like that?
I forget. It's very funny. If you look up, what, you know, like sometimes people send, like, I think carnations, I'd have to double check this. Carnations are a classic cut flower because they're long lasting and they actually have a fairly interesting aroma. But I think they mean I hate you. Like, when you send them, it's like the worst possible message you can send. But they're really common. So we don't know that we're saying that when we're sending them. It all goes back to Victorian times, before social media. Right.
Right.
And before even the post office existed, the messages, subtle messages were sent with the flutter of the eyelashes, the tilt of the shoulder and a flower.
Well, this is your nudge, ladies and gentlemen, to maybe consider some sort of flower. And it does not have to be a red, long stemmed rose by any stretch.
No.
No
color. Just any flower.
Anything
are good,
is lovely,
I think.
OK, John from Georgetown. He said, good morning. I bought a small white pine at Christmas time. It is in a pot and has been left outside. Mm-hmm. What should I do with it? Will it survive the winter in the pot? Mm. That's a good question. I would imagine size of the pot could be a factor here. I don't know. What are you thinking?
Yeah, he says small. So it probably really is small. A lot of times the garden centers will promote potted evergreens as a Christmas plant so that, you know, there's not that guilt of killing a plant and there's not that artificial plastic Christmas tree action happening. Good, it's outside. It would definitely not survive if it was inside. So these are native plants. It is winter. They need to be outside. Hopefully John has placed it tucked into a corner so it's not in the wind. Remember, this wind is a killer wind, particularly for plants that are above ground. It is colder above ground than it is below ground when it comes to the roots. So keeping those roots underground is important. So he can't plant it now, obviously. So optimally, he's got it tucked into an eastern corner, even northeastern, because you don't want hot sun on it. You don't want cold wind on it. So in the shade, out of the wind. I would have probably got a couple of bales of straw if he could, or some burlap, some blankets, green garbage bags full of leaves, anything to kind of buffer, put some air pockets around the plant, the base of the plant, and have watered it thoroughly when it went outside or, you know, when he purchased it. And fingers crossed, hope that it does survive. White pine are very tough.
Okay.
Zone 2, as I recall. So a zone 2 plant at 30 below is struggling above ground. But if it's been properly sort of protected from some of that wind, it probably should be okay.
Okay. Maureen from North York has given us a text. And again, the text line is 1-866-740-4740. Maureen says, hi, Charlie and Dean. Good morning. It is so horribly cold. We had winds up to 70 kilometers an hour last night. Yeah. You were talking about the trees. Mm-hmm. I was happy to hear that they will probably survive. What about our bushes? I am especially concerned about my lilac bushes. Will their buds be affected by this and my cherry tree? Maureen.
Okay, so same thing. These are dormant plants. The plants that are deciduous, drop their leaves and hunker down for winter and have done everything possible to not experience this winter. In their little hearts, they're actually, you know, down in wherever, maybe Guatemala or someplace. They're not really here. So don't worry. Generally speaking, don't worry. The fall, what has impact on plants surviving winter in Ontario is what kind of an autumn we had. If we had a nice slow build up to winter, so all the plants had a chance to slowly but surely become fully dormant, they should survive. If we had, you know, like summer temperatures in November and then a snap frost right after that, then that is very hard on the plants. And then they're not ready for winter. It's just all happening too fast. So as I'm thinking back to this past autumn, I mean, we had some ups and downs, but generally speaking, I think we did have a reasonable number of weeks, if not months, for plants to be prepared for winter. So Maureen, I wouldn't worry about the shrubbery. Lilacs, again, are very tough plants, generally speaking, unless you've got grafted lilacs, which are the French lilacs, but the original, what do we call the sativa lilacs, are tough. Again, like zone 2 or zone 3 plants, pretty hard to kill. As a matter of fact, virtually impossible to kill. They can be a bit invasive. And so, cherry tree, Fruit trees are always a bit of a challenge. What stops the cherries and the fruit trees from surviving, though they survive, but from producing fruit, is a late spring frost. So what will happen is spring will arrive, everything's warming up, the snow is melting, buds are swelling, everything's getting excited. Fruit trees bloom early. And if we get a frost in when all that action is happening, like a cold, cold night, you know, a 10 below kind of night in March or April, then those buds freeze.
That's a bigger problem.
Yeah, and then we don't get fruit. And that's happened in Collingwood in the last 10 years, where there was the apples were wiped out from because the buds were wiped out from a late spring frost. But now, right now, none of that should affect the buds. The buds are completely dormant. The buds are not, shouldn't be affected by anything too extreme.
Okay. I was reminded of something that happened to me last week. After the show, as you remember, I ventured to Hamilton because it was my mother's 80th birthday. Mm-hmm. And in the residence that she has been living in since September, oddly enough, she shares her birthday with another couple of ladies in there, Sharon and Cheryl.
Yeah.
And all of them were born on the exact same day, same year in the whole bit. So, and during this little shindig that we were having there the afternoon, I had a woman come up to me and she said, "I know what you brought your mother. I know what you brought in your room." I said, "I beg your pardon?" She said, "I listen to you every Saturday morning on the Garden Show." So we were talking about the amaryllis last week, and she knew.
Sure enough, yeah, you walked in.
Vicky from Hamilton, who is related to one of the birthday girls on, not my mother, but yeah. So, and she showed me, we got talking about something called a spider lily, and I'm going to send you a picture of it later.
Yeah.
And I saw this and I said, "Ooh." And I said, because she was talking about, you know, giving some away. I said, "I would love to have some spider lily bulbs because it was like nothing I'd ever seen before." Right, but she was talking about her garden. And she said, you know, her little garden in the city is like she gets stuff from all sorts of people and she just plops it in there and plops it in there. And to me, that's a very romantic garden because there's a story attached to everything and a person attached. We have things in our garden that came from the neighbors across the street when they retired and they were leaving and selling their house 5, 6, 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. We took some things they gave to us and they remind us of, you know, Frank and Mila. And we love it.
Yeah, neat. Well, shout out to Vicky.
Shout out to Vicky. Okie dokie. Okay, Mike in Brantford. A very short text. He says, "Small garden here, 5 by 20 feet. Any benefit to leaving it fallow for one season?" That was his ask.
Okay, so I guess he's referring to a vegetable garden. What do you think?
Like he's maybe. Growing,
when it's that kind of defined 5 by 20, that sounds like it might be
It does, yeah. He says is small garden. Yeah, he doesn't indicate whether. And Mike also can text back and clarify whether it's vegetable or not. But yeah.
But it sounds like it could be an allotment garden, you know, the community allotment, or it could be on his property. But the fact that it's such a clear rectangle makes me think it's vegetables because most people do grow their edibles all together. So, benefit to leaving it fallow. Yes, there is a benefit to leaving it fallow as long as you realize that the point of fallowness is to build the soil or rebuild the soil for the next season. For the, you know, the next growing season. So if you're going to leave an area fallow, then look at planting plants. Like doesn't mean just leave it alone and let the dandelions grow, because that'll not make you happy or your neighbors. Instead, think about by fallow, we would plant something that we have no intention of harvesting. And preferably you would plant something in the legume family, because legumes are so excellent for taking nitrogen out of the air and then fixing it, we call it, into the soil, so that when we let those legume plants die down, they will add that nitrogen that they've absorbed from the air into the soil. You know what comes to mind? I mean, I actually got seeds this year for edamame, which is soybeans, right? And so, you know, even if you put some soybeans into that soil without any intention of actually, so there's soybeans that are grown as a crop where they make the oils and tofu and that sort of thing from those soybeans. And then there's the edamame. So edamame, they're all soybeans. The difference is that we harvest when it's edamame, when it's much younger. It's a very, very tender, just recently produced fruit, if you will. It's a it's like a bean in a pod. And that's what we, you know, edamame, we can bake them, roast them, fry them, boil them, do whatever you want with them. You can do all kinds of things, but they're really good for you. So that's sort of, I mean, I'm sure there's other, I can look a little further, but there's other plants that would work well. I mean, I know people use buckwheat sometimes in a fallow field. Certainly something called, I think it's called sorghum grass. I'd have to look that up.
Mike did text back and he did say, yes, it is a vegetable garden.
Yeah, vegetable garden. So nothing wrong with leaving a fallow because you will have better quality and better quantity of produce the following year. But look at ways that you can improve that soil during that fallow season.
Okie dokie. Great question. We haven't had, I don't recall getting a question quite like that for quite a long time. That's a very interesting garden. Most people are not willing to leave their garden fallow for a full year.
No, like, kidding.
Really, yeah. Don't want to do that.
I need my tomatoes, you know.
Yeah, but imagine that's a nice break. Maybe, you know.
But also you have to say, okay, I'm not going to plant in my garden, but maybe he's going to put a few plants in big pots. Mm-hmm. You know, you can always get it, particularly the smaller tomatoes can go into a nice size pot. If we had my friend Stephen Biggs on the show, he could tell us all about straw bale gardening.
Because
you can actually grow things in straw bales. I mean, there's so many creative ways to grow once you've run out of land.
Yeah. Okie dokie. We have to go to a break, but here's the number again. We love getting your texts and your emails as well. Text line 1-866-740-4740. You can also email charliedobbin at c.dobbin at mzmedia.com. And we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yeah, we're back here on The Garden Show. And Charlie, I have a personal question for you. So I would love to know if Elliot were going to get you some flowers for Valentine's Day, what would be a favorite flower of yours to receive? What do you love? What is a flower that you just love? Like I, for example, I love ranunculus. I think ranunculus are really lovely. But what would you love?
You know, I would love just about any flower, except I don't like stargazer lilies, which are the lilies that are pink and white and really, really fragrant. And I find it so interesting how our different noses and brains absorb fragrance. Some people love the smell of stargazer lilies. I, on the other hand, do not. and so I would not like to receive those. I love, you know, hyacinths for their fragrance.
Yep.
I love alstroemeria because they're the most long-lasting cut flower in the world that I know of. Usually what he'll do, because he's not highly confident about just going out and picking what he likes, he'll go to a lovely florist and he'll walk in and say, all right, put together a beautiful bouquet for me. My wife's favorite colors are the following. And then, you know, she likes purple and yellow or whatever. And then they'll put together this beautiful bouquet.
Beautiful.
And, you know, so it'll be mixed. There'll usually be at least one rose in there along with lots of other things. So it's very, very pretty.
Nice. Okay. Tis the season.
Yeah, yeah.
Nancy in Stratford, she texted us, "Hi, Charlie. Any ideas why I can't seem to grow red beets or radishes with any success? I get tops, but few bottoms. Tried very often and ready to give up. Help." Again, that's Nancy in Stratford.
Okay. So I wonder, so she mentions beets and radishes. She doesn't mention carrots. So what do beets and radishes have in common? Not the color, but the fact that they're root vegetables and we're trying to grow a big root. Why do we have issues with roots? Usually because the ground is too compacted. The roots can't expand, or they're planted too close. Sometimes when we seed root crops like beets, or
because the seeds are so tiny,
they're so tiny, and we put them too close together, and they germinate, but then they can't expand their roots. So that's why, like for example, when I plant carrots, they're tiny seeds, and they're always too close together. So once they start to grow, and you can see all the little individual plants, I usually wait until there's a bit of a carrot starting, and then I just start thinning. And of course, you can eat that little bit of carrot It's just, oh, you can eat the whole carrot, tops and bottoms. So you can eat them tiny. And meanwhile, you're creating space for the other ones to reach maturity.
Oh, that's a neat idea.
Yeah. So it's kind of that you make it a crop that you can kind of start grazing early in the game and then keep grazing right through till frost. That's what comes to my mind, Nancy, that and your soil. Remember, your soil has to be, we call it friable. So F-R-I-A-B-L-E, very weird word, not used commonly, but a friable soil is an optimal soil for plant growth. It's got nice texture in the sense of it. It's not made up of just tiny bits of clay. It's not like a slimy soil. And it's not pure sand. It's, again, it's got that ability to hold together. You can make a fist with that soil, make a ball in your hand, and it will hold in a ball briefly before the ball collapses in the palm of your hand. So it's got everything, sand, clay, and silt. And of course, then the organic matter. We always want as much organic matter as possible in any of our soils. So we're always aiming for 5%. But of course, as soon as you're adding organic matter, it's breaking down. So the more you add, the more it breaks down. So it's ongoing. So get that organic material, whether it's composted manure, homemade compost, you know, leaves, straw, newspaper, whatever farms are in your area, chicken, bedding.
Stuff from the guinea pig cage that we put in.
Yeah.
The fish tank water, put it all in there.
Nikki Jabour was with us. Yep. She's gardening outside Halifax. Of course, they use seaweed because they got easy access to seaweed. So whatever you got access to, use it, grab it. Don't let anybody else have it.
I'm going to call this the friable and fallow episode of The Garden Show. A couple of words that are, I call them $5 words. We don't use them very often.
Yeah.
They're just delicious. Our texting line is 1-866-740-4740. Here we can squeeze in one more of these texts before we go to break. Monica from Newmarket. I have a cyclamen that has been blooming well for a couple of years. Now I believe it has gone dormant. Mm-hmm. Or is it dead? How do I treat this dry pot?
Wow. So it's completely... Okay. So what we know about cyclamen is that cyclamen likes cool temperatures in order to flower. But yes, they do go dormant. Do they go so dormant that you have no leaves on them? That's a really good
question. This sounds like a picture would be in order. And if you can, that's another thing. You can always send Charlie a picture at c.dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. Because, I guess that's a fine line. It could be, right, Charlie?
Sorry, just coughing. Cyclamen. Of course, cool temperatures are ideal. So that's 50 to 60 degrees Fahrenheit all the time, really. Of course, you can't do that in the summer. Bright light, but away from direct sunlight. Keep compost moist at all times. Never water from the top, only from the saucer at the bottom. So that's what we call the immersion method, using... Oh, it actually says soft water here, which is interesting.
Are cyclamens, the leaves kind of go straight up, don't they, the cyclamens?
No.
Or is that the flowers?
Actually, yeah, the flowers look like butterfly soil.
Yeah.
And they are traditional winter flowers.
And they're usually pink, aren't they?
Shades of pinks and reds, but they come in all whites. No, not all. Yeah, pink, red, and white. They don't come in yellow or anything like that. So care, reduce watering and stop feeding after they flower. Place the pot on its side in a cool spot and keep it dry until midsummer. Then repot using fresh compost, burying the tuber to half its depth. Stand the pot in a cool, well-lit spot, water to keep the compost moist, and expect it to start growing again. So yeah, don't panic. It probably is completely dormant. I don't know if you need to repot, but certainly don't water and do keep it cool. And it will start to grow again sometime in the next 2 months or so.
Aren't we looking forward to all of that? We are. We are. Okay. We have to go to our next break. 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Back here on The Garden Show on the 7th of February. Before we get to another text, we did get an email back from Cheryl with the Agent Court Garden Club. So, and she said regarding the Culinary Herbs Zoom meeting that's coming up on Monday, that you can email her directly for the code. Okay. And her email is Cheryl, C-H-E-R-Y-L dot Penner, P-E-N-N-E-R, at hotmail.com. Again, that's Cheryl.Penner at hotmail.com.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I want to make sure I got that in. Paul from Etobicoke, South Etobicoke. Good morning, Charlie and Dean. Love your show and all the information you give out on it. I'm wondering if you can tell me if and how I would take a cutting from a summer snow is what he's called it. A summer snow group 3 clematis. That's what it is. Okay. Oh. Yeah. So that's what he's asking, how he would take a cutting. That's a tricky one to take. I have very, very limited success with my clematis. I still can't find the perfect spot for it. And then I'll be going into year 3 with it where I've transplanted. And I'm trying to be patient and I'm trying to make sure I give it the right support, but I'm not still convinced that I got it in the right spot. But you know, I don't know. Can you do cuttings?
Okay, so just to address the question of it's not thriving, maybe I should move it. Don't. I can't tell you how many times over my years in the garden center world, you know, talking to customers, people would get frustrated because they felt that their clematis was not thriving and they would move it.
Move it.
And they would move it. But they'd give it about 1 or 2 years in one spot and they'd move it. Another 1 or 2 years and move it. Every time you move it, you set it back. Let it be. As long as it's getting half day sun, half day shade, or even, you know, more than that, but no less than that in terms of sun. And preferably it's growing up into the sun and the roots are in the shade and it's a good quality, well-drained soil. You're fine. Just leave it alone.
Okay. Leave it alone. Okay. And what about Paul?
Well, Paul wants to propagate his. So he wants to take cuttings. Yes, it is doable, but it is not easy. Propagation of clematis can be quite challenging, actually. You can take a whole bunch of cuttings, but have a real hard time getting roots to grow from those cuttings. So what I would do if I were you is in the spring, when this plant, this particular clematis starts to grow and, you know, you start getting that new green growth. And he said it's a group 3. I just have to remember which one's group 3 because the clematis are grouped 1 to 4 based on when they bloom. So the most traditional clematis are the ones we call the summer blooming. So Jack Manny, the big star-shaped flowers, those are the ones that we think of as our most traditional. And so and they are usually the most vigorous. And they're the ones that we chop them right down basically to ground level in the spring. And then they grow up again and bloom all summer, which is great. Group 3, I have to double check. But either way, to take any cuttings, make sure you've got about 6 inches of new growth, and then you're going to use, you know, clean, sterile pruners on a dry day. You're going to take your cuttings. You're going to use a rooting hormone, number 1 rooting hormone, Stimroot, dipping that cut end into the Stimroot. Obviously, you need nodes that will be covered in the media that you're going to put these cuttings in order to propagate. Mm-hmm. Media could be sand. It could be perlite. Might even work in water, though it wouldn't be my first choice. So you could even try some different media. So if the plant is a good sized plant, take a bunch of cuttings and see what you can get roots from the easiest. As soon as you see some evidence of roots into little pots, you know, potting soil, well drained, into a sunny half day sun location, water as necessary, grow them up probably for a full year before you put them out into the garden, but keep them outside. Obviously next winter, you'll just bury the pot somewhere safe.
Okay, got a question here from Maggie. Maggie was going to buy her daughter a countertop electric composter, and she wondered if you had any thoughts. I find this a bit intriguing. I mean, I only have an outdoor one, but it would be, it must be rather small if it's sitting on the countertop.
Right, and it's so electric to produce some heat.
Yeah.
So, and the heat will speed up the decomposition. Okay, so I have never used such a thing. decomposition will naturally produce heat anyway. So the electric part of it is probably just, like I said, speeding up the decomposition. It's going to come down to a maintenance thing and a feeding the composter, right? So in order for compost to be not smelly, and in order for compost to produce great stuff, you got to keep feeding it. So you're giving it greens and browns. So you might be feeding newspaper for the brown and carrot tops for the green, or peels from your, you know, mangoes. Either way, it's really follow the instructions. I'd love to hear more about how it works out. If I wanted to compost indoors, I would probably go vermicomposting, which requires no electricity, just a Rubbermaid tub or a proper setup with red wigglers. Get the worms to do the work for you, and they don't, you know, no electricity required.
Charlie, we are out of time. We've got more texts, but we'll have to save them for next week. So you need to say your goodbyes.
Okay, I will. Thank you for that, pointing that out. So what did we learn? Text early. Text early, text often. One text per texter. Thanks, Dean. Thank you, Owen. Couldn't do any of this without you. And a big welcome and a thank you to Tanishka, who's joining Owen. And always a big, big shout out to Joe. So thanks, everybody. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.